Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. My name is Michel Chossadovsky. This program is an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization based in Montreal. Our website, www.globalresearch.ca. The Global Research News Hour airs Monday through Friday. My co-host, Stephen Lenman, and myself on Thursdays, and Stephen Lenman on Mondays through Wednesdays and Fridays. Our guest on today's program, distinguished architect from the San Francisco Bay Area, Richard Gage, AIA, member of the American Institute of Architects, and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. I should mention that Richard Gage has entered into a major analysis and research program regarding the underlying causes of the 9/11 collapse of the World Trade Center buildings, building 1 North Tower, building 2 South Tower, and building 7. So it's essentially on this particular topic that we will be centering our discussion. This research by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth at ae911truth.org questions the official story and investigation and presents evidence that the towers were not the collapse, so-called collapse of the towers, was not the result of the planes hitting the buildings. Welcome to the program, Richard. We're delighted to have you.
Thank you very much, Michelle. It's an honor to be here with you this morning.
Now, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about the 9/11, the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and the substance of your movement.
Well, sure. First of all, I've been an architect for about 20 years, and I've worked on numerous different types of building structures, and most recently a $400 million project in Nevada with 1.2 million square feet of retail parking structure and mid-rise office space. Altogether, this has about 1,200 tons of steel frame fireproof structure. So that's a little bit about my background. That's my most recent project. I've worked on a $120 million high school as well prior to that. But about 3.5 years ago, I was on my way to a construction observation meeting, and I found on the radio Dr. David Ray Griffin, and he was talking about the evidence at the World Trade Center that I had not heard or seen at all on the mainstream media. This was KPFA, Free Speech Radio in Berkeley. Now, I'm a Reagan Republican, so don't ask me what I was doing listening to that station, but there I was. And I heard him talking about things that just turned my head around. For instance, beams being expelled out of the side of the Twin Towers at 50 to 70 miles an hour, with the ends of them dripping with molten metal cut to 30-foot lengths and so forth. We'll get into all of the details about that, but I went and looked for him who was speaking that night or the night after, I forget, and I heard him speak on the web cast because they were sold out, 600 people.
Richard, I think we'll have to go for a short commercial break. Our guest, Richard Gage.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour, which comes to you from Montreal, Center for Research on Globalization, our website, globalresearch.ca. Our distinguished guest, San Francisco Bay Area architect Richard Gage, founder of 9/11 Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. In other words, if I understand correctly, you question on scientific grounds the statements made by the government and the media that the World Trade Center buildings collapsed due to fire and the impact of the planes.
Yes, well, there was very serious questions about the official story, and I had never heard any of them prior to that afternoon in March of 2006. So I examined them very carefully. I looked around and looked for other architects and engineers who might be able to corroborate, but there were virtually none. So I realized what I had to do because I came across the veterans for 9/11 Truth, the scholars for 9/11 Truth, the pilots for 9/11 Truth. Where are the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth? Oh, my God. Who is it? Me? I mean, I obviously it had to be done because I had just believed the official story all along with some strange nausea in my stomach when I saw those buildings coming down the way they did, the Twin Towers, and yet with a very explosive events ejecting all of their material outside the footprint in what is supposed to have been a gravitational collapse down to the ground, which would have left 220 acres of flooring stacked 20, 30, 40 stories high. But since there's only a couple of stories of debris, and it's not floors, they seem to be all pulverized, 90,000 tons of concrete pulverized to a very fine powder, most of it, and all of these floors completely missing, metal decking on which these 4-inch thick concrete is poured is all missing. And with a degree of pulverization, for instance, file cabinets, 10,000 of them in each building or so, and they're missing. There's not one to be found, save one tiny piece of one, which is found only in the basement. So anyway, we did start Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. I borrowed Stephen Jones's PowerPoint presentation off the internet and showed it to my the firm that I worked for, and 15 of them saw the presentation. Before this, they thought I was nuts. Afterward, all 15 agreed with us, and 14 were able to sign a petition, and that's what got us going. Today, we have over 860 architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth signed on to the petition demanding a real investigation that accounts for all of this evidence that we've not seen from our government, from the NIST report, from the FEMA report, from the 9/11 Commission report, nor in the mainstream media.
So in other words, what you are suggesting, in effect, that the real cause, that there's a cover-up of the real causes, or at least there's a denial of certain basic of basic principles of how a building collapses. What would have happened, just to put it in perspective, what would have happened in your mind if the planes had hit the top of a building? What would have happened to those buildings?
Well, what would have happened is what did happen. The planes, the impact of the planes was absorbed by the building. The building stood just fine for 56 minutes and 102 minutes, respectively, in the South and North Towers. And even the official story, NIST, for instance, claims the ability of the robust structure to absorb that impact without problem. But then they go and they develop these huge hot fires in their computer models, which weren't even there in terms of their... These fires were oxygen-starved, particularly in the South Tower, which was going out at the time of its collapse. And never before in history had we seen a high-rise steel structure collapse due to fire. And all of a sudden, we have three on 9/11. The jet plane impacts and the jet fuel were not significant to enough to bring down these structures, cites Bill Manning, editor-in-chief of Fire Engineering Magazine, fire protection engineer. So what we have is this dramatic a black box computer animation provided by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, to prove how these buildings came down by structural weakening due to fire. But the problem is that they ignore all of the evidence found at the crime scene, which Dr. David Ray Griffin was going over and which we're going to highlight point by point today.
Now, if indeed these buildings were not brought down by the impact of the planes and fire, does it suggest that they were brought down through the placement of explosives in the base of the buildings? Is that the conclusion that you arrive at?
Well, let's start with the building 7, because it was not hit by an airplane, and it doesn't have the convenient excuse of jet fuel and kinetic energy of the airplane knocking fireproofing off, which is the combination of. I'm quite distracted by the background noise that I'm hearing. If it's possible to reduce that somewhere.
Yes, I think that's true. Okay, I'm sure they're going to fix it at the station.
Okay, so Building 7 is a 47-story skyscraper, just a half a block, football field in length away from the Twin Towers, the whole block, and it collapses. At about 5:20 in the afternoon of 9/11. Now, this building had some fires in it that were started by the debris that hit it from the North Tower, which is actually quite curious in and of itself until you consider what was in that debris, molten iron, as it turns out. This building begins a precipitous and sudden collapse in the second before 5:20 that afternoon. It has the East Penthouse falls 6 seconds prior to the global collapse of the building, starting with next the rest of the penthouse structure. And then this building begins a rapid, sudden, and symmetrical collapse, very smoothly, straight down into its own footprint, almost. And this is in the exact manner of a classic controlled explosive demolition, which we've all seen on hotels, Las Vegas, for instance. There's enough resemblance here, I mean an exact resemblance to a controlled demolition, that NIST should have been immediately targeting in their investigation looking for explosives at the site, which they did not do and they will not do, by the way. So and not only that, there are witnesses that hear sounds of explosions at the base of the building before the building comes down. We have three of them on our DVD, which highlights all of these facts and graphics and video format on our website, by the way, which is AE911truth.org, which stands for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So that's AE911truth.org. And in these DVDs, we cite this sudden symmetrical collapse. Now, NIST acknowledges that for the first 100 feet of this building, it is in free fall. In other words, they acknowledge that would mean there would be no structure in their draft in August if it was a free fall speed of collapse. and yet they're forced into acknowledging the free fall collapse in their final report, but they do not acknowledge the implications of that as they did earlier. In other words, the structure would have to have been removed. Eight stories of structure, column structure, designed to resist this 40,000 tons of structural steel of the weight, designed to resist such a collapse. So with a safety factor of 3 to 5, in other words, this building's 3 to 5 times stronger than it needs to be to resist this collapse. And yet, straight down, this building converts all of its gravitational potential energy into kinetic energy. It can't do any other work. It can't crush 40,000 tons of structural steel and fall as fast as a brick is falling off the top of the building. This is a huge problem for the official story. The physics of it requires that these 8 stories or 100 feet tall of columns be removed for a free fall acceleration in the first 2.25 seconds. This is intuitive for most of us. We know, architects and engineers that I show this to know immediately that this is a controlled demolition, that 8 to 10 fires cannot be responsible. These are scattered, isolated pockets of fires, small fires. Normal office fires, NIST says, which are the responsible for this building.
We have to go for a short commercial break. Our distinguished guest, Richard Gage, this is the Global Research News Hour. We'll be back after the break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. My name is Michel Chosudovsky. This program is an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization based in Montreal. Our website, www.globalresearch.ca. Our distinguished guest is Richard Gage, architect in the San Francisco Bay Area and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. The website is ae911truth.org, and I should mention that Richard Gage has produced a fascinating DVD which documents in detail the issues underlying the collapse, so-called collapse of the buildings. Welcome back, Richard. My question with regard to Building 7 is I understand that, in fact, the announcement of this building was took place before the building actually collapsed. Is that correct? On CNN and the BBC,
20 minutes before the building collapses, the BBC announces the collapse of the 47-story Solomon Brothers building. And remember, no building has ever collapsed due to fire before. And the firemen are outside watching the building on fire, scratching their heads, wondering why they're not putting it out. Well, they've been ordered not to put it out. And they cite some structural damage and concern about a collapse. But when we have all of this foreknowledge about the collapse, in addition to that information, we begin to grow quite suspicious. The BBC apologizes for the error, citing the confusing events of the day. I mean, what's going on here? Does that make them psychic? We also have CNN announcing the collapse of a 50-story building at 10:45 in the morning as a fireman rushes by and says this to a CNN reporter. Well, who was that? And I mean, there was no other 50-story building that collapsed that day. Nowhere near any such truth. So what if Building 7 had collapsed at that early in the morning? It would have been completely hidden in the massive dust clouds of the collapse of the Twin Towers. So we're asking ourselves, was this building supposed to collapse at that time? And was there some sort of delay in its intended planned controlled demolition? A very interesting set of questions arise. I mean, we have construction workers, curiously enough, walking away from Building 7, hearing small explosions, turning around and saying, "Did you hear that? Well, keep your eye on that building. It's coming down." So this is early in the afternoon before it collapses, and the policemen say, "Move it back. If the building's going to blow up, there'll be flame and debris coming down." This buildings don't announce themselves. This is all foreknowledge.
But now, if there was foreknowledge, one can trace who actually knew, because if the BBC and CNN were advised that the building had collapsed, okay, because the announcement, I recall the BBC, they actually said the building has collapsed, but the building was still there in the background of the report. But if the BBC had been advised that the building had collapsed and they didn't verify this story, who transmitted that information? In other words, who had the foreknowledge? And the person who had the foreknowledge, or if it was a press release, presumably knew something about how the building was going to be brought down.
Yes, that's correct. And that's the source of an investigation that we're demanding as well. But more important than that is the several tons of molten iron found at the base of not only Building 7 in the rubble of the collapse, or the destruction of this building, but also in the basements of the Twin Towers. And the firemen described this flowing like lava. And this is real problematic. It's seen and documented by Leslie Robertson, even the structural engineer of the World Trade Center, who says as of 21 days after the attack, fires were still burning and molten steel was running. He says this to a conference of structural engineers just a month later. His associate, Richard Garlock, documents this. Numerous structural engineers document the melting of steel. Even FEMA documents the melting of steel in the two pieces of steel that were saved from Building 7. The rest of it, by the way, was destroyed prior to the report coming out. What does FEMA document in this Appendix C of their BPAT report in May of 2002? They document the melting of steel, intergranular melting of steel, rapid oxidation, sulfidation, and even evaporation of the ends of these beams. This is extremely disturbing because fires don't do this, and this cites the collapse of this building due to normal office fires. Thermal expansion, they say. The beams, long span beams, expanded, pushing a girder off of its seat, causing the successive failure of nine floors, leading to the buckling of a column under the east penthouse called Column 79. And then the lateral instability, by the way, and vertical instability of this building. Within 15 seconds, it falls like a house of cards in on itself. And this requires the failure of 400 structural steel connections per second. This is something that fire, of course, is completely incapable.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. My name is Michel Chosadovsky. This program is an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization. Our website, www.globalresearch.ca. Our guest, distinguished architect from the San Francisco Bay Area, Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. The implications of your research are far-reaching, because if these were controlled demolitions, what happens to the Muslims who attacked America on 9/11? which was then pretext and justification for waging a war on terrorism in the Middle East, and particularly in Afghanistan.
Well, I spoke to 300 Muslims in a mosque last week in New Jersey, and I can tell you this. Of the 300 before, about 40 of them believed in the official conspiracy theory, and about 60 of them were unsure, and the rest believed in controlled demolition right off the bat, which is, after the presentation, I presented the evidence for Building 7 and then also the Twin Towers, which I will highlight now. Those numbers, believing the official story, reduced from 40 to about 2 or 1, I think. And then, for those who are unsure, reduced from 60 to 2. So 98% of people, in fact, everywhere I go, who see the evidence that is very clear from the videos and the testimony of that day and so forth, who actually see it because they've never seen it on mainstream media, but once they see it, they agree with us. Oh, my God, you're right. These are controlled demolitions. This is true with virtually every architect and engineer I present this information to as well. They end up agreeing with us and sign our petition. It's pretty simple. Once people open their minds to seeing the evidence, it's very difficult, of course, to get people to conceive up front that we have been lied to massively, mass murder has resulted from this. And, of course, the Muslims have been blamed for this, Muslim terrorists hijacking these planes. There's all kinds of problems with the official story. This is just the beginning, the building, the evidence in the building is just the beginning of the undermining of the support for the official story. Once people start looking at it, they succumb to reality, and they start investigating themselves the facts and come to a very different set of conclusions. One of the series of facts relative to the Twin Towers that architects and engineers are most disturbed by include its rapid descent and acceleration, and the 118 firefighters and first responders who hear sounds of explosions and see flashes of light at the onset of the destruction of both of these buildings. Huge explosions are described by witness after witness, dozens and dozens of them, even non-first responders, and all of this testimony has been scrubbed from the official report. This is extremely disturbing to them. In addition, the building drops immediately, suddenly, without gradual deformations normally associated with organic, natural collapses like fires. It's two-thirds of free-fall acceleration this building drops at, almost free-fall acceleration, once again indicating the 80,000 tons of structural steel designed to resist this building has been removed suddenly and symmetrically. This requires a pattern sequence of explosives to remove this, and we have the evidence of those explosives in all of the dust throughout lower Manhattan. What do I mean? We've discussed the molten iron already found at the base of all three towers. We have photographs of it, videos of it, in fact, pouring out of the South Tower 10 minutes before its collapse. We have in all of the dust, we have these previously molten iron spheres, which are small, about the size of a human hair, billions of them. Every sampling has them. And the official sources and investigations, USGS, RJ Lee, they find them as well. The chemical ingredients of these molten iron spheres include aluminum, sulfur, manganese, iron, oxygen. These are the typical ingredients of ignited thermite, and it can't be anything else. They're found, for instance, on the Brooklyn Bridge just minutes after the collapse. We're not talking about spheres from iron welding equipment at the site. how did these spheres form? Well, if you had thousands of cutter charges throughout the columns and beams in the building, and you detonate them in a very precise order under explosive conditions, the thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. So when it goes off and under explosive conditions, that iron, which it ejects as its byproduct, is atomized. What happens to an atomized liquid? It forms itself into spheres due to surface tension. So this is the only way all these iron spheres can be formed. Not only that, Dr. Stephen Jones, a physicist formerly from Brigham Young University, finds these red-gray chips in all of the dust. And these, the largest one is about a 16th of an inch in diameter. Red on one side, gray on the other. The red side is composed of this very interesting mix of particles of iron oxide and aluminum powders. These particle sizes are 1,000 times smaller than the human hair. This is nanothermite. And the iron and aluminum are mixed in the perfect one-thirds, two-thirds ratio that makes thermite. And these sizes of these particles, they're perfectly uniform, their shapes. Rhomboidal in the case of the iron powders, platelets in the case of the aluminum, and then perfectly mixed. So this is clearly evidence of nanothermite, which is an extremely sophisticated manufacturing process conducted only in the most sophisticated Defense Department contracting laboratories. And it's occurring. All the dust has this powdered concrete, really, throughout lower Manhattan, 12 inches thick in many places, has every sampling has this stuff in it. So it's very clear that this is not made in a cave in Afghanistan. It's very clear that Al-Qaeda didn't have access to this very high-tech material. This is the biggest problem, I think, for the official story. I'm also looking for 110 floors found at the base of either or both of these buildings. And as I mentioned earlier, it is gone. The architects and engineers are wondering how 4- and 20-ton perimeter wall units are ejected laterally out of the side of each of these towers, 600 feet, ejected at 50 to 70 miles per hour. I mean, we have the videos. The physics is very clear. They also wonder how we have explosions going off 20, 40, and even 60 stories down below this supposed collapsing building. Which are ejections at 160 to 200 feet per second, which are expelled by explosives.
Just a question, because if indeed if indeed the evidence that you have collected, which I think is very difficult to refute, points to the fact that this was not a terrorist attack, but something else. You're very cautious not to make any kind of accusations. You're asking for an investigation. I presume also a criminal investigation is required. But if what you are saying is true, we're dealing with probably the biggest lie in American history.
Yeah, I agree. This is the story of the century, and you would think some enterprising journalist would break the story, and indeed they have tried. But it doesn't get brought into the – it stops at the cutting room floor. There's something going on in our media, which is owned by five corporations, 90% of the mainstream media. Who sits on the boards of those corporations, by the way? Why aren't we getting this story out? Well, it's the same people who sit on the boards of the corporations of the oil industry, the defense industry, the insurance industry, the banking industry. These people all seem to have each other's interests at heart, and they all profited enormously from the results of 9/11, in which we've already invaded, of course, two countries. And
a third.
There's a reason.
Pakistan as well is now being invaded. If you look at the logic of all the people that were involved in putting in the explosives, removing the debris, we're talking about hundreds of people who know that this is that either they're complicit or they have knowledge of the fact that this was that the official story is fake. How is it? I mean, this is not simply a hit and run. It's an operation involving several hundred people, if not more. And how is it that that truth does not prevail when so many people are actually knowledgeable of the fact that it is a big lie?
I think it can be laid at there's at least two major reasons. One, the media is not interested in the story. I mean, if maybe people have come forth and they just, the story is not, is censored, basically. And by the way, that's documented by Project Censored, which documents the 25 most censored stories every year in the mainstream media, 9/11 being at the top of the list. But also, these are highly compartmented black operations against the American people. By the way, psychological operations is what this was. We were all put in trauma. We're not prepared to think rationally about these. We were given the official story of structural weakening due to fire right away from the mouthpiece. We had within 48 hours, we have all 19 hijackers identified very neatly, cleanly, and we're going to war, you know. And yet now 5 or 8 of them have been interviewed on BBC, London Guardian. They're not on the flight manifest. There's huge problems in the official story, no matter where you look at it, including millions made on put options by what turns out to be the Deutsche Bank, which is where the 9/11 Commission, that story led them. And then they stop and they say in the 9/11 Commission report, well, we couldn't have gone further. We didn't need to go further because Al-Qaeda wasn't at the heart of these put options. Fascinating.
Yes. I understand that Osama bin Laden on the 10th of September was in a Pakistani military hospital within walking distance of the U.S. military mission. That was a program by Dan Rather, who said he was there on his hospital beds, being treated, for his kidney problem.
American hospital.
No, that was an earlier one. That was in Dubai. But on the 10th of September, he was admitted to in Rawalpindi, Pakistan. He was admitted to a military hospital in the urology department. And on the 10th, he was in hospital, and that hospital is in a military compound, literally. That was presented in a CBS News report with Dan Rather. That's one aspect. I've been looking at other aspects of 9/11, more the geopolitical aspects. But what you present, of course, is irrefutable. It raises the issue: if it's irrefutable, how is it that the lie prevails? It's a little bit like the Spanish Inquisition. You present the lie and you say, well, this lie is really the truth. Is that not what we're dealing with?
Well, yes, apparently. We have many engineers have come together to reinforce the lie. And these are, by the way, the same engineers the series of investigations, original FEMA report. Well, the American Society of Civil Engineers came forward with these volunteers. Well, these volunteers earn $10 million annually with their Defense Department contracts. These are not your average PTA volunteers. And then they worked themselves into the FEMA report and then the NIST report. These are not independent reports by any means whatsoever. The same group of individuals find themselves, by the way, working on the Oklahoma City bombing, the Murrah building. And we have very serious problems of bias, and these reports are not independent. Not only that, these people who are brought in to to NIST to conduct and lead this investigation turned out to be experts themselves in nanothermite. That's very interesting. I mean, they should have been the first ones to be suspicious of the collapse of these buildings, given all the evidence for explosives, and conduct a thorough investigation into it. But they appear to be leading the investigation away from the molten metal, away from the free fall collapse, away from the pulverization of all of this 90,000 tons of concrete, away from the missing floors, away from the molten iron spheres found in the dust, the red-gray chips of nanothermite found in the dust. Anything but the truth is what we're getting from this small group of engineers, vastly outnumbered by the 860 architects and engineers demanding a real investigation signed on to our petition at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Have your findings been presented to professional meetings of architects at the national level? People who are not, I'm talking about people who are not necessarily part of the of 9/11 of the of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
One of the main activities that we do is go to the conventions, AIA conventions, American Institute of Architects, of which I'm a member. We go to these conventions, present it to the architects, and they see the Building 7 coming down on a 60-inch screen, and we have all the brochures and DVDs there to hand them, and they are blown away.
We have to go to another commercial break. Our guest, Richard Gage, stay with us. The Global Research News Hour will be back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. This is Michel Chosadovsky. The Global Research News Hour, Monday through Friday, is an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization. Our website, www.globalresearch.ca. Our guest, Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, who has extensively investigated the underlying causes of the so-called collapse of the World Trade Center buildings, buildings 1 and 2 and 7. We are, Richard, at the final leg of this program. The time has flied very fast, and my question to you is, since this is a concern for everybody in America and around the world, because it justifies a military agenda, it justifies a national security agenda, what can we do as individuals, as citizens, to reveal the truth and reverse the lie?
Well, I think it's important that every architect and engineer be contacted by your listenership in their area. That's something that everybody can do from home. And it's simple. Just find their email address and send them the link to ae911truth.org and simply say, Mr. Architect, Engineer, I'm not a technical person per se, or if you are, fine, highlight those credentials and say, did you know there's 860 architects and engineers calling for a new investigation? Please look at this. I need your help. Here's the link. I don't know about this, but you would help me. So people who are asked for help tend to respond, and they'll be curious themselves. And once they get to our site, they'll realize that this is not conspiracy. This is science-based forensic information found at the crime scene. And that's what we stick to. We don't speculate as to who may have been responsible, why they did it, how they got away with it, and so forth. So they get informed yourself, and then spread the word to other architects, engineers, and everybody else that you can find, because it's a grassroots movement growing by millions every year across America, Canada, and the world. I've spoken in five cities in Canada now, and across Europe in cities, and I'm going to 14 cities in November in Australia, New Zealand, and Japan. Being brought to Japan by the number three person, I think, in power right now in Japan as a result of the upheaval politically they've had there. People are tired of being lied to. And we are here in this country, too. And so if everybody does something to inform themselves and to inform others, that, I think, is the best step. And sign our petition. We have 4,000 others, almost 5,000 now, besides the architects and engineers.
I think it's ultimately what is really at stake is breaking a consensus. And then the whole construct, official narrative collapses like a deck of cards. A bit like the building itself.
Yes. It's a big illusion is what it is. And the truth pierces that illusion. We cannot underestimate the power of truth. Yes, it's taken 8 years for us to build an incredible momentum of millions of people demanding a real investigation.
Well, that I think we have to say goodbye. That's a fabulous way to conclude. Our guest, Richard Gage. This is the Global Research News Hour. My co-host, Stephen Lendman, will be there tomorrow at 10 Central Time. Goodbye for now.
Thank you, Michelle. Bye-bye.